So welcome to this episode of the Telltales podcast. Today we have Tom Langston here. So Tom has recently presented at the Camp Engage for Nearpod, and Tom will be discussing some of the game design that he's spoken about within the Teaching and Learning Conference and how this impacts on education, teaching and learning, and also his experience of using game design in education.
Thank you very much, Chris. Lovely to be here and sort of discussing game design. I guess the first question is, what is game design maybe versus gamification and what compared to game-based learning as well? So is there a difference? How does that work and where does it split up? So the simple one for game design is it's the process by which a game is created. It's just making something and using things like game. You need to understand game mechanics to understand how to make a game. The difference there to sort of gamification is the gamification, I think, a lot of people take to be, oh, we're going to play a game in the classroom. I'm going to give my students a quiz. And that can be part of it, obviously. But gamification in and of itself is not just about playing a game. It's using game mechanics and game elements and design in your creation of the entire course. So it can be a sort of the complete pedagogical sort of umbrella as it goes across the entire course, not just for one activity. Although you can do it for certain things, again, using things like Nearpod or Mentimeter, Vivox, whatever it might be, they all have those kind of quizzes and things where you can rank. Kahoot is obviously I know we don't have the license at university, but I know a lot of people still use the free version because they like that kind of element of, it's very simple, simple colours, you press your answer and you sort of rank yourself against other people. But gamification, it's about motivations by providing incentives and a reward system within that learning space. So again, within Moodle, for instance, one of those examples is that sort of digital badges. And again, there's been, I think, a lot of debate with staff at the university and in the wider context where some people sort of say, it seems a bit childish to give students badges. But things like that, be it PlayStation, Xbox, you'd think, why would people care about it? But lots of people do like that completionist element of making sure they tick everything off. So again, it's one of those features that actually may not seem valuable, but you can't really say that not every student won't love it. I mean, some people won't, but they'll find other ways around it, and that'll be a byproduct of what they do in the classroom. So if gamification in that sense is about looking about, and I'll come to this in a minute, about game mechanics itself, but it's about using the creation of games and game design as a process throughout the entire course, module creation, and bits like that. And so the difference there, again, to game-based learning is it is very much about learning through play, and the learning process is made into a game itself, and it can be applied at course, module, or just be a specific topic level. And it's designed to challenge particular learning objectives. So again, if people are looking at one sort of small part of their course, and maybe they've struggled to engage people in the past, it's what could you do to help them understand that kind of context? Because actually, sometimes it's not even about the content. It is that kind of, by getting them to play a game that puts it into it frames it. It's that kind of framing of it. I think that is a really good way of getting people to understand, that's how it fits together. And again, sometimes it can almost be as simple as a conversation. And that's like, well, that's not a game. And it's not, but what you're doing is that collaborative nature that you get in a lot of games. It's that collaborative nature where we were discussing this morning, when you sort of used to teach music, it was a conversation, but you'd put a game element in there. You'd get them to challenge each other, and it's like, oh, you're wrong. It's that kind of almost sort of panel show, quiz show thing of just a minute and all that, where people challenge repetition or challenge inaccuracies. And that then is taking conversation into a different level, not in a bad way, but a way that the students are kind of engaged. And again, I think that kind of collaborative nature, but also that competitive nature, really does come out for a lot of students. Again, some people don't like that environment, and that's one of those bits where if we can try and give them multiple ideas and multiple ways to engage, it's only going to benefit everybody. It's that kind of inclusive element of it. But I think you can take elements of games and not make a full game out of it, but just put it into a situational scenario where the students don't realise they're kind of playing along, but they are still learning. One of the bits I said at the Learning and Teaching Conference, and it was while writing the slides I kind of came up with it, and was like, actually, this is very true for me, which is when I've been studying, and I don't know whether you found this as well, Chris, but it's like when you're studying, you're always told, you know, to be a good writer, you need to read a lot. You need to be there academically, or if you're just writing in general, just reading anything. And I think for me, game design requires playing. You can't make a game if you don't know how to play a game. If you're someone like us, I don't really like games, but I want to put gamification into my class. It's like, well, how do you know where to approach it? Most people know how to play some sort of game, be that Snap, Monopoly, Game of Life. These are all games that we've probably experienced at some point in our childhood or with our own children. But games, the game industry is now, unsurprisingly, grown exponentially, and there are so many different types of games that are out there. And I would say, while I may have an addictive problem here of having a board game shelf that looks like a board game cafe, there are board game cafes around all over the world these days that let you go and try different games for the price of an admission and a coffee. You know, it's you can go and play elsewhere. You don't have to go and buy and spend sort of £50-60 on a very expensive game. You can go and look at that. The other thing is, on that kind of reading side of it, just go and download lots of rule books. If you go to Board Game Geek and look at their top 10 games, download the rule books for all these games. They are very heavy. They are probably quite dense games. There's someone there where you're like, I don't understand. A lot of the time, for me, when I play these sort of big heavyweight board games, I remember, for instance, Ark Nova. We got that recently. And again, it's a game about building a zoo. It's actually really interesting that when you first get that rule book and see all the pieces that go in this like huge box, you're like, oh no, far too much. When you start playing it and you start going through the rules one by one and breaking it down, after the first couple of rounds of like, what the hell do I do next? You realize the process. And it becomes process-led, and it's like, actually, once you get the idea of what the game is doing, and it's like, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, it's actually very simple, but there's lots of things you can do, and you have to make lots of different choices, and it is still complex in the strategy behind the game, but there's lots of games like that, where it may be simple to pick up, and Ark Nova is not necessarily simple to pick up, but there are lots of games that are simple to pick up, but actually the strategy behind it are very complicated. I mean, chess, drafts to a lesser extent. But, you know, you can teach someone chess with, like, these are how the pieces move. I always lose at chess because I don't have that forward-thinking mentality to go, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Like, oh, but that, oh, he's gone. Oh, that's gone. And suddenly I lose to my 7-year-old nephew, who is much better at chess than I am. But it is that kind of, there is a mindset to chess, and grandmasters can see multiple moves ahead. And I think that's, again, it's that promotion of a mindset that I think games can bring into the classroom. So where to start with it all? Always, don't, like with tech, with anything, don't go, I want to use this because I want to use this. I think there's that bit of, you need to start with, I've got an idea and I've got to solve a problem and I don't know how to do it. It's coming to people like myself, like the TEL team, where we can sort of have that conversation and say, okay, what is it you want to do? Why do you want to do it this way? Maybe we can throw in 5 or 6 different options and sort of talk through each one to get the most useful and valid one for the bit to solve your problem. So the 3 questions I break the idea to solve a problem down into is, what are the students learning? Why would a game help that? Or why would insert your current solution into that? And what will it let the students achieve next? Where do they go from doing what it is that you've done? Ultimately, we want them to learn something. So it's about expanding their knowledge. With a game, you can use it to assess their knowledge. You can use it to challenge their understanding of that knowledge. It can be task orientated. So you, again, but it's that kind of idea that by giving them things to do in small chunks, you can get them working in a group, get them working on their own. You can get them doing something that gives them that task to sort of repeat a process, understand the concept, and work through it. And again, there's plenty of examples that I know lots of the TEL Act Dev team have that can do that. And again, even if it's not, if you're hearing this from outside the University of Portsmouth as an institution, learning designers, learning technologists, whatever you may call them, have these kind of experiences and will help maybe you to understand what it is as well. Because again, I think there's often that kind of thing of, you see someone as a particular role, but actually we all have something that we can bring to the table and all have ideas that can go to that. So I think these kind of conversations can help there. To my next point on my slide that I have up of collaboration skills. It's how can the students or how can we all work together to get out of this? There are many games out there now, things like, to use the phrase, pandemic. It's a collaborative game where you're working as a team. There isn't, you know, you either win together or lose together. And there are plenty of examples of these kind of games. A good one for the kids, just throwing games out there, is called Zombie Kids, where the game evolves as you play it and you get new stickers for the game. So the kids get to, sort of, you know, build their character up, almost like a role-playing game, elements of that in there as well. But it's you win together and you lose together. And it's the same thing here where maybe in a business context or in a science context, it's that kind of almost Dragon's Den pitch idea where you have to come up with something as a team where you're then maybe competing against the other group. So the academic, or maybe you have a council of other students that have to assess all the other ideas and you have to sort of vote on the one that you'd think is the best option. And it's that kind of thing of you're kind of gamifying it, but they're also working in a team in a group. And that then provides that contextual application of what it is you want them to understand. What is it in business? What is it within science? What is it in languages that you're really trying to get to? In one of the first kind of enable sessions, and again, there is plenty of stuff online about what we do at the university and team-based learning design with our enable process. But in one of the first sessions we were doing that, with that, we were looking at an assessment type. And it was for a particular course that was just kind of up on the block as a, you know, here's an example. And it was a kind of an international relations type course. And the assignment was a very fairly standard essay of 6,000 words, for instance. And it was like, how can we, without changing this, how can we make it not just a standard go and do a 6,000 word essay? And it kind of came to that point of writing almost a position statement, but doing it as part of a debate. So you almost have a model UN where you give it a scenario, each person takes a country, they have to research the country, their kind of values, how they'd approach the sort of negotiations, and you do this. And then the write-up bit is your basically your pitch and proposal to go back to the council. And so everyone's assignment would be different, but it all works within that context and that wider pitch. So it can be a really interesting way to get people to do the same task, but in different ways, but that all fits into a much wider and broader kind of picture. So the next question of where do we start, of why would a game help? Oftentimes, depending on how you design it, motivation to achieve. People want to do better, they want to beat someone else, they want to beat the game if you're doing it collaboratively. And that engages them. It engages them in an activity, like I said, with the kind of motivation to achieve, that rank comparison to others. People like to be better than other people. It can also be a flip side to that. So for Kahoot, for instance, there's a video online talking about blind Kahoots, where what the academic who delivered the presentation talked about was her students were getting fed up of just the standard quiz in a lecture because the same five people would always be at the top. And so anyone below that top five would eventually tune out and stop doing it. So what she did was started to challenge them in groups with much harder questions that they wouldn't just know automatically. So they kind of have longer time, but they have to go and do the research in that lecture to make the vote. And yes, you could guess quickly, but then you're waiting another 10 minutes for the next question to come up. And actually, you may not get it right and you don't really learn anything. And I think her students really started to see the value in this. As I mentioned before, process-driven. You can break things down using a game into smaller tasks. And oftentimes it's that kind of idea that if you're given a whole range of things you have to learn within a course, you're like, how do I get through this? It's like, where do I start? And if you can break it down into a process and get people to understand smaller parts of that process, and you go, I'll do that first, now I'll do that. And it promotes that logical and creative thinking. Games are really good at that. You know, you've got different games that do different things to different people. So again, a game that everyone's probably done, like charades.
Yeah.
We'll put on our best RP accent, and we played some charades with our scones. But like things like Pictionary as well, they're kind of party games. They're social, but it promotes more of a creative thinking side of things rather than just a logical or process driven. Because not everyone likes the same type of game. There are plenty of games out there that I don't like that other people love. And it's that kind of bit of, you can make a game in your course, you can gamify it, like I say, gamify the entire kind of course and module, and not everyone is going to get on board with this. And it's that kind of bit of, we can't please all the people all the time, but what we can try and do is make sure that everyone is able to engage with it. The other way you can do it is get the students to make a game themselves. So they do the process kind of for you. They have to gamify some element of it, because actually by making it, they're being both logical and creative. But it's that kind of then providing context and providing research elements that they, to make their game, they have to be able to do a whole number of other bits and pieces. So there's lots of ways you can use game design and gamification within the classroom. And it doesn't always have to be on you as the academic to make it. You can post these problems to the students and say, I want you to make me a game that helps teach undergraduates, or, you know, A-level students, GCSE students, or you've got to make your concept understandable for seven-year-olds. How would you do that using a game? And they then have to really start thinking about it in depth. And so that moves on to what will it let the students achieve next? Firstly, I think it provides an awareness of knowledge gaps. So playing a game, you kind of realize the questions you get wrong, the bits you might not need. Also gives that interaction with others and a creative outlet, which can help demonstrate learning. I think it can really work to challenge them to make the iterative changes and further develop their skills. It's by providing those motivations, people want to get better. And again, you won't please all the people all the time. Some people just want the traditional, I want to go to the library and read the book and know the stuff and do this. And it's, well, that's fine if that works for you. Is there any way you can help do the research and provide it for someone else making the game? Give people tasks. Again, it's task orientated. And hopefully all of these kind of bits could enhance their passion for their subject and your subject. So that's kind of the base bit. The bit that I was talking about from the Learning and Teaching Conference was the problem I had that I decided to use to make and apply game design was the project I'm working on. We needed to help academics to understand the approach to building the course in the way we wanted to. So in this case, it was block teaching. Again, myself and colleagues went out and researched and spoke to other universities and other academics that have done block teaching. And one of the bits we found is there's no particular one right answer to it. Everyone will approach it differently depending on how they work. So again, I am taught on my prof doc in a block method, but that block is essentially you turn up for 2 days of a Friday, Saturday, you're taught the stuff in those two sessions, and then you go off and do the work. It's not broken down across weeks. It's just you are taught intensively for that period and then you do the work yourself. That isn't going to work for much larger courses or ones where students don't have the same self-efficacy to go off and then work for 6 months on an assignment. So it was about helping academics understand that. We had the framework that we thought we'd use. So it was what we were doing for our model of block teaching, we understood, but it's how do I make that into a game? And what we did was sat down with a couple of bits of blank paper and just started drawing out ideas, looking at what could work, what would work. And again, from the idea of by playing lots of games, you understand what different things do. To start with, I'd pull on lots of different ideas from lots of different board games that I'd either played or owned. And some of them you sort of start going, no, that's not going to work here. And it's not that that's a bad game or that, it's just that game mechanic doesn't fit in this scenario. And it was that kind of bit of taking an idea from one particular game where it's like, well, this doesn't work exactly, but how do I refine it to fit what I am going to do? Because lots of games, and the more games you play, the more you realize lots of games are the same. So for instance, I mentioned Ark Nova at the beginning. That's got so many different game mechanics in it. But actually, each one of those game mechanics can be played almost as an individual game in another game elsewhere, so as a smaller thing. So it's that kind of, like, there are deck building games and it's like got an element of that. You've got to pick the bits you want and get rid of other bits. You use that element, but then you also add on another bit and then another bit. And so again, games can be from very simple to lots of different mechanics that then span to a much bigger and wider game. So like I say, we took a particular board game, stripped out the bits that didn't work for us, looked at what we needed it to do, and went from there. So onto kind of the game mechanics side of this as well. Game mechanics are the bits of how a game functions. So I've got a list here that I will very quickly read out. But like I said, if you don't know what any of these are, doesn't matter. You can go and either look them up or, again, start playing games and you'll start to understand it. And I'll maybe go through some in a minute. But so game mechanics, deck builder games, Roland Wright. When I first heard that and people talking about it, I always thought they were talking about a person, Roland Wright. And it's not, it's like roll the dice and then write down something. So social deduction, push your luck, collaborative tile placement games, engine building games. And that doesn't mean trains and building car engines and things. What an engine building game does, an example of that is like Wingspan, where you have your board in front of you and you change bits on the board to make it better and improve it to get a more logical process going again to improve your thing. Role playing. Obviously, lots of courses, especially, again, mentioned science before. Science, so a lot of role-play activities. I think they call them OSCEs for the assessment side of things. I don't know what that stands for, but it doesn't matter. But it's where the students get to take on that role and sort of live out that kind of experience and find out whether they've done things well, badly, and it's in that safe environment. So role-playing can actually be a really good way of understanding and empathizing with the situation. I know a lot of people, it's like group work. When people say, oh, we're going to do role play today, everyone's like, oh, I don't like role play, I don't want to do that. And it's like, when you talk about it like that, people don't like it. But when they do it, they go, oh, that was really useful. Often the time it's that kind of, I don't want to do that because I feel embarrassed. I think a lot of the times people don't like to feel silly or like, they see role-playing in like game senses, like Dungeons and Dragons. And they're like, how's that going to help me? And actually, it's about empathy. A lot of the time, it's that empathy and understanding of another position. So role-playing in that sense is a fantastic way of students to kind of understand the differences. And then the last one on my list there is worker placement. And again, it's about, so if you want to look it up, Carcassonne, you place tiles down and then you have workers that you place that do certain things that earn you points to win the game. And again, there's lots of games that do it in lots of slightly different ways. But using any one of those mechanics, you can start to create elements. You could use a few of them to make one game or just take one of them and build a game around that one element. And like I say, it's about having that conversation with other people, colleagues, and saying, look, I want to make a deck building game that relates to health sciences. How would I do that? And so a deck builder, you start with a small hand of cards, and usually in a deck builder, you have cards that allow you to buy more cards to improve your situation, and then other cards that do stuff, be that attack another player or whatever it is to win your scoring system. So again, having that conversation with people who maybe understand board games slightly better, or if you've played them yourself, it's that kind of thing of how could I apply it here and what could I do next with it? And again, when you're playing it in pure game sort of senses, it doesn't have to be exact and it doesn't have to really answer all the questions. What it has to do is provide a nice context to get people to understand when you get into maybe the deeper elements of the learning. It doesn't have to all be playing a game. That's ridiculous to think you could do a whole course purely through games, unless you are on a full game design course, and then you'd hope it to be there. But it's that kind of, a lot of the time, it helps people understand smaller parts of it to get them into the bigger bits that you need them to learn sort of later on. With that kind of how you know what to do, a lot of the time it's you have the subject knowledge, and it's either taking your game experience of your own or going to chat to other people and having that conversation. And then how do you know if it's working? Well, the three kind of rule here is play test, feedback, repeat. Play the game. Does it work? What breaks? I made a game once I thought was really good. Someone learnt how two cards work together, and they were able to use those cards to basically beat the game in three rounds. And you don't think that will happen, but you don't know until you play test it. Feedback. Do people enjoy it? What things could you improve? Where does it get better? And then repeat that process again. Play test, feedback, try again. And you will at some point have to stop to get it made and get it finished. But sometimes if you, like I say, if you give it to the student to make the game for you, that play test, feedback, repeat model is that kind of iterative process that they need to do to learn it. So they may not finish the game directly, but actually by doing that kind of over and over again, they learn what it is you wanted them to understand and things. I made a little checklist for the Nearpod session I did with the headings of learning objectives, challenges students face to meet the learning objectives, possible solutions, games mechanics that facilitate the solution, and required resources needed to make the game. So you take your learning objectives, put it down. What challenges in the past have the students faced? Maybe even get the students to fill this in. Is you put the learning objectives in for them as well, but then sort of say, what challenges have you faced when we were doing this? Possible solutions. Again, you won't necessarily get that answer on your own. It could be a very collaborative discussion. It's then a question of looking at that problem that the students are facing with the learning objectives. Well, you know, game mechanics, you go to Wikipedia, look, put game mechanics in, and everything I talked about is probably on there anyway. I think that's where I got them to start with. As a list, you can find out what game mechanics are, and it's then, well, this is where they're struggling. How could roll and write, deck building, help me get that? And then what do you need to make the game? And maybe we can put a picture up in the show notes for this, but I've got the photo of me cutting up cardboard. You know, I just took cardboard boxes, cut them up, and put them together to make the game. It's a very, if you Google playtesting games and look at the images, you'll see people playing with very, very basic things, you know, a handful of tiddlywinks and cards they've written and drawn on and made themselves. It doesn't have to be a polished final game to get you going. It's just about the process. Games can really help people understand things if you look at it the right way. I've got this lovely quote I sort of round out my sessions with when talking about game design, and it's from Shell from 2019. It says, would-be game designers often ask me, how do you become a game designer? And the answer is easy. Design games. Start now. Don't wait. Don't even finish this conversation. Just start designing. Go now. And I think if you took that from the beginning of his book and then never read the rest of his book, you'd lose all the other things that they bring up. But it is kind of the interesting point that we can very easily put things off because it seems hard to do. And you're like, oh, it's too big to make it. I like the idea of game design, but it's just too big. Well, maybe it is, but maybe if you just try a small bit, maybe even just writing out the rules to what your game would be helps you then make that process up yourself. And it's that kind of bit of an activity could very well be. What I want you to do is take a subject with your students, say to the students, right, what I want you to do is... I want you to write the rules as if this was a game. What would we need to do to play a game that does this? And they then have to do that kind of breaking down of the concept into bits that would be a rule set. It doesn't actually have to be a game that you actually create, but it's about the process. Games can be enjoyable. I appreciate not everyone likes games like I like games, but I think there are bits of game design, game mechanics, game process that anyone can get on board without realizing they're doing it. It doesn't have to be here we're going to get Monopoly out and play this, but it can just be, like I say, part of a conversation of getting the students to kind of challenge each other.
Thank you, Tom. That was absolutely fascinating. One of my my questions I thought while you were speaking is there's been a clear rise in games. So certainly things like escape rooms have become very, very popular. Certainly over Portsmouth, there's a lot that are available and that you can do. But is there a risk of almost alienating some students that don't necessarily engage with games or that idea of gamification that may see it as, well, I'm coming to university, I just want to be taught in that very traditional academic kind of chalk and talk way and not see the kind of the value of gamification or game design and see it as something that's quite childish almost. So how would you deal with that?
Fantastic kind of question. I wish you hadn't asked it. No, I think the interesting bit there is, like, you bring up escape rooms. I hate escape rooms. They don't work to my brain. I am not that logical. And for me, when you do an escape room, be it for learning or for fun, is like, I don't get into the process of what it's trying to do. So I'll sit there and do it and with other people, but I don't really contribute much and would be that student at the back that's just like, well, I'm here because. And like I think, like I said, is I appreciate these are not going to work for everyone. The interesting one of the chalk and talk that wants to just do it in a traditional manner, well, I could say, right, well, you need to read this book and this book, and then do that assignment. Go. And that student can go away and do it and then maybe come back to you with questions. If I was teaching in that respect, what I would try and do is sort of not be that dismissive of them and sort of find out what they didn't like about games, why they thought they were childish. And say, look, your point is valid. It can appear that way. What I want to do is get you to this point. So how would you fit into this process? What could you do that isn't doing quite the same as maybe the rest of the groups? But is there another smaller group you can work with that would do something different? And it's challenging people to do it kind of their way. Because, again, games, be it computer, be it board games, whatever, there's a massive range of what we can do in that space. Not all games are the same and not all games are alike. There's obviously like orchard games. I'm looking at you now, Chris, going, do you know what an orchard game is? You probably do. You don't know what an orchard game is. Orchard Games, they're a publisher who make games for kids. So things...
Oh, I know. Yeah.
There you go. I'm getting
the pennies dropped. Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Like the shopping list game, you know, you have to fill your shopping cart with stuff by matching pairs or whatever. It's a very simple game for children to learn how to go shopping. I don't know. But it's oftentimes it's just about playing with them and getting them to do something, because obviously we know the value of play for learning. It's that kind of bit that the game itself can be all ranges of different weights, or it's about a process. So again, it's having that conversation with a student that likes chalk and talk and getting them to buy into a process that they fit with. So you know, you can sort of say to them, from the research, me just talking at you is not going to get you to learn anything. It'll be you going and doing something. So what can we do for you that fits within this sphere that you want them to still engage and don't want them to just be a retention statistic that they never turned up? But you also need to make sure that they fit into the process as well, how they want to. And that, I think that's the nice bit, is it can be a lot of different things to a lot of different people in a way that suits their requirement. So yes, you may have to have a few sort of conversations at the beginning. You may need to have more private chats. But what you do is sort of start, you know, at that front of like, this is what I want to get to. I appreciate that not everyone is going to want to do it in the same way. What I'm going to do is next week we'll have individual chats. I want you to self-assign groups, or these are the groups you're in. And I want you to come and have a conversation with me about how you fit into this, so that they get what they want. You know, we want them to learn and want them to enjoy their learning. I don't think there isn't a way we could include them, but it may not be the way that you'd want it initially. But it doesn't mean to say they can't be included, or do it in a slightly more chalk and talky way, but actually getting them in somehow. What that is, I don't know. But that's obviously going to be, I think, one of those bits that we also say students are ... And it's like students are individuals. Everyone is different, despite being a homogenous group when you see them stood in front of you or sat in front of you in the classroom. But everyone in that room is going to have different levels, enjoyment, and whatever they get out of it. So it's that kind of bit of I know lots of academics try to engage their students on a personal level, but when you've got courses of 500 students, it's not possible to realistically do it in that granular way. But actually, it's possible to sort of understand that not everyone is going to be the same in that 500, and get them challenged in a way that meets their needs. So again, it's that kind of conversation of like, right, how many of you feel this? You get over there, we'll have a conversation about what we could do with you lot. And you, so again, it's that kind of maybe asking questions, maybe getting them to do a poll or a quiz using some technology first to sort of like, again, help assign where people should go so that you can, again, tailor the activity to the relevant mindsets that are in that class.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Tom. And it's been absolutely fascinating listening to you, and certainly your wealth of knowledge and experience with playing board games has certainly had an influence on this. So just one final thought before you go. If we've got academics, teachers, learning designers, learning technologists, whatever role you're in at the moment that are listening to this and thinking, what's my first step? So I love the idea. I love the idea of gamification. I love the idea of challenging students to learn in a different way. What's your one golden piece of advice?
I think it has to be go and play a game. Go and find out what you like. Go and find out what game mechanics are. And then start thinking, well, how would I apply this? Does it fit? Because it may be that it doesn't. You have to use the right tool for the right job. But yeah, if you've never played a game, how do you expect to gamify anything? Because you know, it's just, you need that wealth of knowledge. Strangely, my dad hates games, never wants to play them, would rather just drink his beer in peace in the corner, which we let him do. But he's got a few games that he does actually like. And it's one of those bits of, there is something for everyone. You've just got to find what it is for them. And again, people don't like games for lots of different reasons. He's like the youngest of four brothers. And it's one of those bits where if you're wailed on by three brothers constantly, you probably don't want to interact with many people. You want to sit in the corner. In games, there is something for everyone. It's just you got to find it. So if you say, I don't like games, I think they're boring or childish. It's like, yeah, maybe they are. And maybe you need to do something different. But there is probably a game mechanic that would work for you. Equally, I was reading an interesting article the other week about this person that's sort of like, all my friends love games and I hate them. And every time we go round, all they want to do is play games. I'm like, please, no. I think there's an element as well of, for people that love games, it can be a bit pushy. It's like, how do you mean you don't like games? There are plenty of friends that we have around that just, you don't even bother looking, you know, they just don't want to do it. And that's fine too. And for those people, you have conversations, you have other things that you do. And I think it's the same with the students that we're working with. It's giving everyone that, like I said, that option to find something that fits their needs. So it may be that you'll do gamification or you'll game design something. Like I say, in gamification, it's about badges and rewards as part of the process. There will be some students that are motivated to achieve by getting the badges for your course. I'm not a massive fan of badges and kind of that side of sort of game design. I'll do the work and obviously I'll get the badges that I achieve, but I don't care if I win or lose on them. I'm very much a position of game playing of, I know I'm probably going to lose this. I am not that competitive. I just enjoy doing it. So if I like my learning, if I like what I'm learning, I'll just do it anyway. The badge does not help me get there, but for some people it does. But again, a very short question. Yeah, that's the one. Thank you, Chris. But it is, if you want to incorporate game design, if you want to do games, you need to play them to know what it is you like as well, and then work from there.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Tom. And all of the additional resources that Tom has spoken about, we'll make sure that we pop within the show notes. Please make sure you do subscribe, and we'll see you next time on the Telltales podcast. Thank you. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Telltales podcast. please do check out the Telltales blog, which can be found at telltales.port.ac.uk. You can also follow us on our social media channels at Tell Portsmouth on both Twitter and Instagram. Don't forget you can subscribe to our podcast here, but also from major music streaming platforms such as Apple Music and Spotify. Additional information about our shows can be found written within our show notes. We thank you for listening and look forward to seeing you next time.